do your masticatrix. And it was some substantive items raised in the last round of questions, but I think the thing is the relevant members on track, even now we can get some responses to that when we return. Chairperson, I have the responsibility of presenting on the paper of continuing education and training and skills. So if I can say, I think it's very important that these two sectors, we work together to ensure a deep understanding of the challenges that are faced in these two sectors. I think that the committee's question is very decoupled from contextual higher education, which set up universities, and universities are a critical component of the post-school education and training system. But I would argue that, in fact, some of the greater challenges that we are faced with are in the colleges and in the section of skills development, and I'll talk about those one by one. Superintendent, I think that you would like me to deal with the colleges first and then to go into the skills. In terms of the documentation that the committee has, basically there is a PowerPoint that the estimates of national expenditure, which everyone has a copy with, is also very important because that gives the text in terms of what's been achieved. And it also gives the text in terms of the detail. The strategic plan I am going to refer members to. The two components that I will be looking at is both the five-year plan as well as the strategic plan. Now, whilst the presentation comes up on the screen, I'll just talk a little bit about what Program 4 involves. We've called this vocational and continuing educational training, and the reason for that is because this branch, which is headed by an acting Deputy Director General, contains both the FET colleges, which I increasingly tend to refer to as vocational colleges, and it includes adult education post literacy. So the National Kariguri campaign remains with the Department of Basic Education, but it's our responsibility to address the education and training needs of adults post-literacy. If the slides come up, I'd like to refer you to the strategic plan, because I think everybody has that. The five-year strategic plan is on page 54. And Chairperson, the first thing that I want to mention in relation to this is that you'll see that the current structure says that we've got two chief directors, planning and institutional support, and another chief director programs and qualifications. When we do the review on the organizational development, it's quite clear that we're going to have to expand the capacity of the program for vocational and continuing education and training. Members are aware that in terms of the FET Act, this is, well, in terms of the Constitution, it's a compliance responsibility. The FET Act quite clearly specifies the responsibility of provincial MECs and provincial departments of education and gives some responsibility to the national minister. We are in the process now of managing the transition of colleges from being provincially administered to being a national function. And there are various legislative acts that are being considered, including the proposed amendment to the schedule of the Constitution to bring them fully into the higher education sector. The sense is that across the political divides of the National Assembly and the provincial landscape, that there's strong support for this because of the need to have an integrated post-school education and training system. What it requires at the moment is very careful work with the provincial departments, and we've done many things. But the three things that we've done is firstly the medium term budget policy statement indicated that this would be becoming a national function. The money that was in the provincial equitable share was ring-fenced so that in the political processes of provinces, the money could not be touched from the baseline that was established, and that baseline for the that ring-fenced money has then now been made a conditional grant. So all of the money for the colleges comes into our budget and is reflected as an amount in excess of $3 billion. And then it is, in terms of the framework of the Division of Revenue Bill, given back to the provinces as a conditional grant. So the money comes into us and out to the provinces, and there's very clear frameworks within the conditional grant, which you'll see in DORA. And those conditions are taken forward in the framework agreement and in the protocol that is being signed currently between the minister and the MEC. So strategically, what we've tried to achieve with that is a sense that the resources that have historically been available for FET colleges need to be preserved for FET colleges during the transition, and they can't be eroded because of the multiple demands on provincial departments in relation to the basic education system. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the minister is going to be establishing a Council of Education Ministers in terms of the Education Policy Act, so that MECs will now be attending a Council of Education Ministers with administrative-based education, and they'll also be attending a Council of Education Ministers with Minister of Higher Education and Training with its own HEDCOM. The third thing is that we are currently visiting all of the provinces. We've been meeting with college principals, college council chairs, provincial education department officials, to talk through what this transition means and how we have a clear line of march that's coherent and what colleges are not subjected to mixed messages. Chairperson, it seems to me that the presentation is not going to come on screen, but everyone has copied. And we've had a bit of a gremlin. We fixed this, but now the presentation isn't showing. But in slide 20, and the function, somehow we've got a replication of functions for quality and HRD. So instead of looking at slide 20, which you can keep before you, I want you to rather look at page 54 of the strategic plan. And the functions here are to do work with public FET colleges, private FET colleges in the ERC, and in terms of financial planning to support the function of institutional support. Now, if I can just mention one thing that might be puzzling in terms of 414, is that the education relations and conditions of service function is particularly complicated, particularly deeply complicated, because the employers of the staff at FET colleges are now the college councils. So we are still in the chamber of the ERC trying to mop up the improvement of conditions of service for college lecturers. What happened was that we were able to persuade the Minister of Finance to make an additional allocation post midterm budget policy statement for improvement of conditions of service, but that money will only be released when negotiations are concluded. And the department's role is to support the organization which represents all of the college councils, which is the FET college employers organization, which is a group of people who work from the community on the board, and we have real capacity challenges. So there is work going on in the ERC together with, at a high level with unions, to try and resolve that. So the one function is the whole question of planning and institutional support, and the second program has to do with programs and qualifications, which includes the college curriculum development and support youth development programs, adult education, and training. Now, Chairperson, one of the points that I want to make here, when we had the earlier conversation about how we are going to need to move forward into a new organizational structure of the department, is that I would say now that I don't think that this organizational structure as it sits above the programs should necessarily be what it needs to be. And we will report to the committee on that. But the budget for the program is going to be increasing at more than the estimated 6% of some of the other programs, which was based on conditions of public service employees. But it's going to be increasing at 10.7%. 7.5% over the NTF period. Now, the biggest proportion of this budget is the competition of 3.7 billion, and the large increase is mainly due to the increased subsidies to FET colleges to accommodate salary increases at college line, which we want to bring the colleges in line at least with the progress made in the occupation-specific dispensation for teachers, because that's clearly a matter of justice. In terms of the performance measures for vocational continuing education and training, we'll see that the measures that we've given there are to support development of college institutional capacity. That's a major challenge. Colleges are going to need greatly enhanced capacity to manage the HR function as well as the financial function. With the move of colleges in the national plan for colleges to a regimen which is based on program funding, based on student enrollment linked to programs, it then means that there's greater responsibility at institutional level to undertake planning functions, to have that properly supported by financial planning and management, and to link that with staff planning and the consequent human resource implications of that. The second key performance measure is a critical one, and again, there's a whole range of issues that we are working very actively with stakeholders to find resolution to. Is that we need to develop and maintain a diverse range of high quality responsive vocational programs for colleges. Colleges have been through enormous curriculum changes over the last years. There was very careful consideration given, and a national curriculum vocational was established at the colleges, which is at NQS level 5 and below, because it's a program that certificates annually. And the purpose of introducing the NCD was to address what were acknowledged weaknesses of the native 191 courses, often abbreviated as the N courses. And the purpose was to really strengthen conceptually that program to address some of the deficiencies in the performance of students emerging from the school system. So there are strong components in terms of literacy, strong components in terms of numeracy, and then vocationally orientated programs. The NCD has had its first graduate last year, and a great deal more needs to be done to consolidate and break down that program. What has happened, though, is that there's also some reservations in some components of industry that the loss of the N courses, components of which are specific to the requirements for qualifying as an artisan, are not adequately addressed in the NCD. So we are in a process of roundtable discussions with stakeholders to find a way forward in which we can be more responsive to the needs of artisan training, more responsive to the needs for more flexible modes of delivery, including part-time, more responsive to the need for some accelerated programs, whilst not abandoning the huge strengths that the NCD brings. That was the second key performance measure. The third key performance measure is to review adult education and training to ensure that responsive and enabling policies and programs can be put into place. Now, given the issue of adult education and training, one needs to understand that the key clients of the post-school education and training system are youth and adults. We do have adults spread across the system in universities, in workplace, in colleges, and increasingly we want all of those institutions to be responsive to the needs of adults, both employed and unemployed. Why there's a specific directive on adult education is because there is a hunger amongst many adults who've never been able to acquire school level equivalence. It's a matter of personal pride and standing with the children. It's a matter of being able to progress into post-NQS level 5 qualifications. That we believe that there should be an adult-specific matric to put simply as that. We don't think that the matric, as it is written by millions of school children over years, is necessarily the most appropriate metric for adults. We want to have something that's much more flexible, much more focused, and there is a committee working on the curriculum for that program, and I'm happy to report on it at that time when we do have more time. So page 54 gives the key overall structure in terms of the five-year plan. And if I can take you to page 82, we now get to some of the specifics. Now, Jefferson, I did indicate when I began that there were some issues I would have liked to have commented on, and I would do so when all of the members were here. And it relates to the very important question that was raised by a member from Swin. I can't see my notes right now, so I'll talk from memory. Member Franklin asked the question, has it been a strategic decision to focus on progress objectives? And I want to say absolutely. That doesn't mean that all of our work is based on process, but we did, in our discussions, say that in preparing the strategic plan, we wanted to give space to report formally to this committee on the processes that we are undertaking in order to put into place the kind of systems that are necessary. In preparing the strategic plan, we all, and I think I in particular, was very concerned that sometimes strategic planning has a time horizon of 1 year, can become quite insular. And it can mean that you're rushing around chasing targets and losing the long-term perspective and losing the long-term picture. So you will look in all of the programs and see that there's some very specific deliverables, and sometimes it is true that we say there will be a report. That report must come to us. Portfolio committee, and the portfolio committee must engage that report. But if we don't consciously plan for some of those process outcomes, they'll fall through the cracks, and we'll always be working on very short-term horizons without standing back and looking at the bigger picture. It is inevitable, given the construction of this new department, that we do need to look systemically at what needs to be done. In terms of the time that we have, for example, we need to think much more carefully about the National Skills Fund. The report of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, which the Minister will release on the 16th, is going to have huge implications, and we want to be able to work with the committee in saying, these are the outcomes and this is what it means for our planning. The second thing that I want to reiterate again is that as I understand the regulations which guide strategic reporting, is that strategic reporting, one is bound by Treasury to maintain those strategic plans on a rolling basis. And when we depart from that plan, we must now report to the committee. So there's definitely continuity. It's not exactly business as usual. But I would imagine that as we work with you in the next phase of strategic planning, we may very well be revising what has been in the rolling annual targets, because there will be new mandates. There will be very clear new processes that need to be undertaken. But if I just quickly look at what is in the strategic plan for colleges, reminding you again that this is an area of which huge amounts of work is happening, is that we are planning in terms of supporting the institutional capacity, is that we have to develop strong monitoring systems and reporting systems in terms of college finances. If the college councils are the employers, we have to make sure that there's proper payroll functionality. We have to make sure that there's proper HR capacity, because this is going to be localized to individual colleges. And we are committing ourselves in the time frame of this year, for example, to make sure that these financial monitoring systems, the financial manuals and guidelines developed for colleges are part of the PFMA. And these are particular challenges when the colleges are still constitutionally a concurrent responsibility. We've included a process goal of supporting the transition of colleges to an exclusive national leadership concept of competence. There is a transfer oversight committee, and that's going to be reporting to the Council of Education Ministers and the HICCOM structures. Shepherd, and I'm conscious of time, so I'm not going to go into all of the boxes in terms of performance measures and output for those two pages. If I can just indicate in terms of regulating and supporting private colleges, this was hinted at, it's not explicitly stated in the presentation on higher education, is that one of the areas that we're hoping to actually achieve some economies and a greater efficiency is by looking at the separate functions for regulating and supporting private colleges and regulating and supporting private institutions, because that one might enable us to consolidate functions and liberate resources to be used elsewhere. But a huge amount of energy of the branch goes into regulating and supporting private colleges, monitoring them for compliance and performance, and evaluating applications, as well as taking forward what members have shown a particular interest in, which is the advocacy campaign, so that people are aware of cyber and understand that they need to look for registration. The question of supporting, providing support to private FET colleges is something that there's a lot of discussion about, because at the moment we have regular meetings with registered private colleges, which are really information sessions, and you'll see that we've committed ourselves to 8 of those. But there is the question of if there is more that we can do to support private colleges who have huge potential that currently are not complying, particularly in areas of the country and in sectoral areas where the public colleges are not necessarily meeting the needs. The work that's happening with adult learning centres, committee members may be aware that there was an extensive process of policy development for public adult learning centres. You have noticed that this is also a function which has been allocated to the National Minister, but it's also constitutionally a matter that's a common responsibility with provinces. And I'll be frank with the committee that it's early days for us to indicate what we see as the future, but what some of the considerations in whether or not we think that the adult learning centres should necessarily all come to the direct responsibility of the national department is a much greater challenge in terms of employment of a much greater number of employees. In the meantime, we're continuing with the policy processes underway. The norms and standards for provincial adult learning centres are being have been promulgated and are being applied. The Education Labour Relations and Conditions of Service, I've spoken already about the technical support that we need to give and the urgency of a resolution to the conditions of service matters there. In terms of the college development and support, we to carry on consolidating the work and updating the NCD qualifications policy, as well as develop subject and assessment guidelines for 5 new subjects, as well as looking at the subjects in fundamental subjects as well as in the broad subjects. There's work being done around textbook approval and continuous assessment. So, listen, I want to just pause here to say that for something that should is a matter of concern is it was reported under the discussion on programs that the exams function is being maintained as a single function within the building of the Department of Basic Education. In fact, it's much more complicated than that, and we're still grappling with what it means. Fundamentally, where we are is that the exams function that was previously an integrated function has now been split into a basic education function and higher education and training function. And that means that we are going to have staff working in the building of basic education and working as part of a whole team, that we will be taking direct responsibility in terms of the examination system for colleges. Our long-term planning on the examination system for colleges is that as we build capacity in colleges for improved practices of teaching and learning, and as some of the new curriculum initiatives continue, we would like to move away from a centralized school-based examination system for colleges and move much more closely to what is the pattern in higher education. A particular curriculum initiative that is being proposed as something of a flagship for the department is covered in the 20-year strategic plan under the question of quality and relevance. If you look at the strategic plan on page 21 to 22, we're proposing that we urgently need to look at the question of the particular qualifications and programs that are offered at FET colleges in order to exploit the basis of the FET Act and the whole intention of the National Plan for FET colleges so that we are much more responsive to the needs of professional vocational and technical education as well as academic learning programs. And there's a project that's being proposed called the Collaboration for Occupational Skills Excellence, which is going to be building bridges in terms of curriculum construction directly between industry and the agents of delivery in the colleges and linking to universities of technology. And that's covered on pages 21 to 22. And it's clearly linked to the curriculum review processes that are outlined on pages 83, 84, 85, around there, 85, 86. Chairperson, I can talk about quite a bit much more, but I'm aware that you want to stop in half an hour, so if I stop now and take questions on the college function or the vocational and continuing education function, then it may be time.
Thank you, Gigi. Honourable members, I just want to suggest that can we take the last presentation and then after that we will go for questions, clarities, comments, and actually discussion in some other areas where we feel we need to make an input. Thanks, Honourable members. Gigi, you can proceed to the next presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. If you move to the skills slide, which you have in front of you, and again, I'll refer you to the ENE, as well as to the strategic plan. Chairperson, I've made the point that in terms of the limited budget for the department, in terms of its operational plan, we face huge challenges. In providing the necessary support for these functions, which is one of the reasons why we have stressed so strongly that we see ourselves as obviously a small department, but it needs to work very closely with the stakeholders and partner institutions so that our efficiency is maximized through their efforts. But one of the areas where I think we face huge challenges in terms of having the resources that are required to support the work that needs to be done is in the skills development section. And I'm going to ask you to look at the 5-year strategic plan, which is on page 55. Not just because I know that this is a function that's new to members who are historically in education, although I think the other members who historically work more in the area of skills, is that we have been allocated the Skills Development Act and the Skills Development Leaders Act. And the purpose of the Skills Development Act is to provide an institutional framework to devise and implement national sectional workplace strategies to improve the skills of South Africans, to make sure those are integrated with strategies of the NQF, as is outlined in SALSA, and that's been particularly taken forward in the establishment of the Qualifications Council for Trade and Occupation, which was launched a few weeks ago. There's particular responsibilities to provide for learnerships, and to steer the funding, the skills development levy funding to the seekers and the NSF, which primarily is taking place through the National Skills Development Strategy. Now, what is very significant is that in 2008, the amendments to the Skills Development Act provided for the establishment of the National Office and Moderating Body and the Quality Council for Trade and Occupations. And I don't think it's any secret to anyone that there's huge national concern about the decline in the training of artisans, and it's a huge priority for the department to work together with key stakeholders to not only establish the National Artisan Moderating Body, but also to make sure that the regulations contemplated in the Skills Development Act and all of the consequent activities that need to take place, including the revitalization, the sale of Indela, are all urgent tasks. Now, I think the committee is also aware that the activities of the National Skills Fund and of the CETUS are driven and derived directly by the framing of the National Skills Development Strategy. The National Skills Development Strategy 2, which was due to expire at the end of this financial year, has been extended for another year, and we've got intensive processes underway to prepare the new national development, the new National Skills Development Strategy, to take us through consultative processes so that it will guide the work of the NSF from the next financial year and drive the work of the CETUS. The CETUS has submitted the service level agreement and strategic plan based on the extension of the NSDS 3. At the same time, we've also got to take forward very efficient work of re-establishing the CETUS landscape. Currently, we've got 23 CETUS and a range of work has been done suggesting various new configurations. The commitment that the department's made is to take into the April meeting of the National Skills Authority initial proposal for consultation around the reconstitution of the CETA landscape, as well as preliminary framework for National Skills Development Strategy, which we want to work very closely with the sexual education and training authorities and the capacity that they have, particularly in terms of assessing needs within sectors, as well as working very closely with the human resource development strategy. And as many of you are aware, that's been launched by the Deputy President on the 30th of March. So it's very important that the National Skills Development Strategy links to the human resource development strategy and that those policy frameworks and goals directly guide for the resources that are available within the skills area as channeled through the CETUS and the NSF. And quite explicitly, we believe that public institutions should effectively be used for much of the training purpose. All of that's covered, Chairperson, on page 55. But now I want to get into the details of the five-year plan and just indicate that I will say frankly here that I had great difficulty in working on the drafting of this section because there are far many more functions than we currently have chief directors. So if I can just go through it with you. We do have a chief directorate inherited from the Department of Labour, which is responsible for CETA coordination. And that chief directorate has the responsibility for providing a dynamic interface between workplace and learning institutions, promoting quality learning at work. So if you look at the bottom of page 55 from 5111 to 5116, there's a huge amount of work that is embedded there. And then lost at the bottom of page 5 of that page, 5116, it says support QCTO-NAMB. Well, that's a huge function on its own. It's embedded within CETA coordination because there isn't another spare CETA director. And we are going to be taking this forward by establishing a special project team on artisan training. And we're talking to SAFWA about ways in which we can rationalize and utilize some of the capacity within SAFWA. Again, the special project funding to establish the QCTO. So the one directorate, the second function is looking at efficiency and effectiveness of CETA delivery, and as was indicated in a recent meeting, is we have to deal with CETA underperformance. We have to contribute. We have to have a better department-wide information management system. And again, Chairperson, if you look at your strategic plan, we have on page 21 a major proposal, which is a very significant, and if there's time, I'll ask Mr. Patel to talk to that because it falls within his function. But we are putting together a major project to establish an information base for strategic intelligence, which will work across all of the departments, including HRDSA, as well as universities, colleges, and schools. The issue of the Chief Director for National Skills Development Strategy, this is something around which the grounds are very fluid and a great deal of work is happening. We have submitted, together with the strategic plans, which will have come to this committee, all of the 23 seekers and the various public entities, FALCO, TAP, NSFAT. We've also submitted the strategic plan for the National Skills Fund. And we've committed the National Skills Fund to working within the extension of the NSDF2, but we also need, we believe, to be very significantly repositioning the National Skills Fund. I doubt if it's going to be time to talk about that today. The processes around adoption of the strategic plan of the National Skills Fund are a little bit more complex because the National Skills Authority has a responsibility to advise the Minister on the strategic plan of the National Skills Fund. So if you have a copy of the strategic plan of the National Skills Fund, you'll see that on the front page it indicates that the Minister will sign off on the strategic plan of the National Skills Fund by the 30th of March. That's to accommodate a meeting of the National Skills Authority, which is taking place, I think, next week, which will consider that draft plan. The National Skills Authority, on page 57, has various functions. It has the function on advising the Minister on the National Skills Development Policy, on the National Skills Development Strategy, for directing the undertaking of research that will enable the authority to best fulfill its advisory functions and guiding development of structures and systems. It should have a strategic management unit and program support. Chairperson, we've done a great deal of work with the National Skills Authority. A chairperson has now been appointed. We will be, the National Skills Authority has approved the job description of the chief executive, well, of the executive officer, who once appointed will be will be part of the department. Executive officer will have responsibility for working with the National Skills Authority in terms of developing a strategic plan for the year. But some of the important progress that has been made in relation to the National Skills Authority is to secure much more greatly their independence in terms of the advice that they'll be giving to the Minister, and at the same time to separate some of the operational overlaps that have historically, I think, made it difficult for the NSA to be effective. It's now well understood within the National Skills Authority that they have an advisory structure, and as an advisory structure, it's their responsibility to advise the Minister in terms of the executive functions that are taken forward by the department and the advice that is given to the Minister. So, for example, with issues around poor CETA performance, historically there's been some ambiguity about whether or not the Skills Authority itself should be investigating CETAs. There's now consensus amongst us that if the department, on the basis of information it has, is ready to advise the Minister in terms of action that needs to be taken in terms of particular CETAs, that process would be subject to review in terms of the NSA advising the Minister itself that the advice that was given to the Minister was not correct. One of the issues that's difficult is that essential to the adequate functioning of the National Skills Authority is for it to have research capacity. We're working on a process we would very much like the capacity for the National Skills Development Strategy, the capacity that supports the work of the National Skills Authority to be closely aligned to the HRDSA, so that we get optimum use of available information and maximum cost fertilization of ideas. So the National Skills Development Strategy is going to be tabled, as I've indicated, in the April meeting of the NSA, after which there will be both sectoral and organizational and constituency-based consultations at a high level and in many constituencies, hopefully at shop floor level, in order to inform that strategy so that we can certainly ensure that it lands with HRDSA, and so that by August we should have a draft final national skills development strategy for the minister to adopt, which would then be implemented by the CETAs in the new CETA landscape. So, Chairperson, all of that is hugely ambitious, and at the moment we are doing it with two chief directors and an acting DDG. It's one of the DDGs that have been advertised, and my own sense is that the only way we're going to survive with this multitude of responsibilities is to make sure that some of these critical functions, as I've indicated, the National Autism Moderating Body and related work, is taken forward on project funding. Chairperson, which this time allows me to make a comment in relation to two points that were raised in earlier questions, is I think that members of this committee are beginning to understand the complexity of the department that we're facing and the need for more conscious implementing all of the time. I think one of the members asked, how is universities linking to HRDSA? And I think that's precisely what the level of the DG and the DDGs working together is attempting to ensure. It's a huge load on the acting DDGs and permanent DDG at the moment, because the person who's responsible for colleges, for example, has his hands full, but we're also expecting him to understand what's happening at Skilled and in university and HRD as well. So historically, for example, Gertie Mellon has been working in universities, and now we're expecting her to participate fully in understanding the cost departmental priorities and projects, which I'm sure is very intellectually stimulating, but physically exhausting. The second thing that I want to say in conclusion, and Tebas and I haven't gone into operational plans of skills, but they're there in the text and people can read them, and we've only got 15 minutes, is that it's also clear that the intentions of the money book gives this department a great deal of, gives this committee a great deal of scope depending on where the battles are going to go. But if we just did a quick thumbs up, which is very dangerous in a public forum, but let's look at some of the wants that both we and the committee would like to see. Let's say we want to double the number of students who get a National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Can come out on a piece of paper, that's $2 billion. If we want to increase the number of students in FETs, which we desperately want to, at the moment I'm still trying to understand the figures, and I'm happy to report them in more detail, but I would say we are a third of the capacity of universities. If we want to multiply by 3, that's another $6 billion. If we want to establish 2 universities, which we do, that means that if the current team, $17 billion, provides for 23 universities, maybe we can add another $1.5 billion, let alone the capital expenditure. So what that means is that all of the work we want to do requires more money. Also, the work you want us to do requires more money. And I think the challenge that we face as a department of the committee together over the next months is to understand more deeply what we can do with the resources we have and where we want to strategically go into the MTF billing process and ask for more money. We're very happy, and we're going to be preparing that with Minister on Monday, we're very happy to go to the MTF billing process, which will start in June, and say we want another $10 million. But I think it's a question of strategy about what we are going to ask for in particular. And that requires a depth of engagement on a particular issue that maybe we'll never have time for in our committee meetings. And maybe as we get into the strategic planning and the MTF process, it might be advisable, Chairperson, and the real Chairperson, actually set aside some time to say, how do we now deal with this? We will have the NXS report. We will have some preliminary figures from the establishment of 2 universities. We'll be able to give you more report about the colleges. How do we seriously interrogate these needs, and what advice do we as the department and you as the staff authority give to the minister and to cabinet course, linear disconnected are entirely outside the minister's plans. I'm sure he also likes the extra $10 billion that we're asking for. But where can we achieve efficiencies? Where can we make the convincing arguments to get all of the money that we think we need? Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Honourable members, now it's time for us to ask clarity questions, comments, and questions. Honourable Lekgetho, Honourable Jane, Honourable Khadebe. You can start, Honourable Lekgetho. You will follow.
You can tell us what the staff complement is in your FEC section, at which level the people are appointed, what the vacancies are, and when the vacancies will be filled. We might not be able to do it now, but because I'm actually quite worried about the capacity issue, given the range of problems that FEC colleges, we know what they are. Some of the ones I visited, they did have major governance problems. The council lines up with staff associations against the CEO. All kinds of governance problems. So it certainly requires a lot of. You would have to babysit those councils, essentially. Some of the FET colleges, they need to be placed under administration. I mean, a whole range of issues. You know what they are. So the question is whether you have the capacity. My second question is about distribution. How is funding for the FET colleges? What's the distribution mechanism? What is the formula? I presume it's not the same as universities. So, information question. Just finally, a comment about your remark about strategic objectives. I think it would be really desirable for this committee to meet jointly with the Economic Development Portfolio Committee and with both ministers, that is Ibrahim Patel and Minister Breda Zamandi, so that we could speak about how the knowledge economy fits into economic development. That broader discussion can best happen in that kind of setting.
Honorable Khadeva.
Bonakar. My main concern is in relation to the budget that we allocate for FET. That it looks like it's still low compared to the one that you allocate to the FET. Wouldn't it maybe have an intent in terms of assisting this FET to grow? I remember when we made noticed many aspects that FET is the key specific role that they play in ensuring that there's enough capacity of education in that sector. But in terms of the funding, it was very low. And as a result, you know, it degrades the standards of FET in providing an education. Maybe we can be able to assist us in terms of those aspects. But the other aspect relates to
White House, Mr. James, maybe you're on the way.
Well, basically, my was related to the management of this system. Because at some several times we take a notice to say this system, in terms of their management, it's really questionable. and also their usability in terms of function, because we really need to at least ensure that these sisters, as you know, after the assessment and they are changing, they also respond quietly to the one of these five key priorities of studies in the university. Because as I was saying earlier, the intention of this department is to ensure that within its term of office, within the 2 years of its establishment, they should make a difference. We should be able to see today this department definitely created for a very, you know, valuable purpose. We mustn't find ourselves having to question today, hey, but doesn't look like this what you call assistant. But you must feel that it's got a very heavy impact that is also contributing to our thing. But also the last question is that the you just mentioned to say there are these other few FET colleges that are also operational, and there are these other private ones. I'm trying to check maybe any systems that you are in place in order to prevent that you don't have these fly-by-night institutions that are also erected and finding that they disadvantage young people. Because I think we must be able to find the space of monitoring these processes, but also assisting those ones who want to, you know, emerge, but rather than of having these underground institutions that are also operating around these places. Because if you can just go to Joburg, you'll find so many institutions of these nursing colleges, these business colleges that are also emerging, but you don't know where they are. And but also because of, you know, some of the assumptions that young people also have, they just think that they go to just to get a certificate, but at the end of the day they find that they're not accredited. So that we just look at the system, that how do we monitor also closely this system. Surely we want to provide funding, but also we must look how do we expand or also open up a gap or create sort of a bridge of allowing the new one that wants to establish, but not the right channel, so that you avoid, you know, because when it's closed, we put in a bridge or put a gate there, you know, they will also see that you are closing them outside, then they erect they might own these underground institutions, and that's going to create a very serious problem. I've just tried to check whether do we have any systems that you're going to try and monitor all the systems. Sure.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Did you noted comment? Honourable Chair. Thank you. Thanks, Chairperson. After time, we'll listen. I'm going to try and be as quick as possible. I think that the first question, we apologize that we didn't answer that last time. SASCA memoranda, I think, is on the agenda of this meeting if we have time, because it was delivered to the chairpersons of the portfolio committee. But we, in fact, have got very good working relationships with the South African Union of Students. The minister met with them at the beginning of the year. We do have a unit within the branch of higher education which meets directly with stakeholders and is in constant touch. In the review of this partner with the organizational development, I'm not convinced that we should necessarily be doing that, because I think it's a political function. I think it's the responsibility of institutions to manage the institutions and for us to the institutions link the student groups. That's going to be something that will be, I think, discussed. But in fact, I would say that we are in constant touch with SRCs across the country through that office and with the national coordinating structure of SRCs, which we in fact have established. The department facilitated and supported the establishment of the national structure. If the question is also about the content of the memoranda, all that I'll say is that one of the terms of reference
of the review committee for the National Student Financial Aid Scheme was for that committee to indeed look at the viability of providing free higher education progressively, as is part of the Polokwane resolutions of the governing party. So that report will provide information, and we are saying unequivocally to all parties that have an interest in this, and in particular the students, that they must engage that report. The minister is going to be asking robustly for public comments and saying he's going to be guided by those comments, and he's looking forward to people's feedback. So the students need to engage with the NSFAS report when it's released next week. The next question to do with the FET sector, it's particularly complex. I think we've acknowledged that we have limited human resource capacity across several branches, but with the FET it's particularly complicated. The FET branch of the Department of Education, before it split, had a branch of higher, and we inherited all of it. It had a branch general, and we took a small portion of that. It had a branch policy planning, we took 40% of that. 30% of that. When it came to the branch F, that was the branch that dealt with the band within the higher education qualification framework of further, which was both schools and colleges. So we've got one chief directorate and two directors. One chief director, two chiefs, and two directors. We've upgraded one post to be acting to be a DDG. But when we come to organizational development of that sector, we really do need to look at what's required. Now, I've outlined the process in terms of splitting from the Department of Education. If we conclude the constitutional negotiations so that the function moves from provinces to national, we then have to go again into this intensive and deeply difficult process of saying to another department, now we've come to take your function and your post. And we're saying it to the provinces now in the ground, that we would need to take not only the direct funds of the other colleges, but we would also need to take the resources that go with the functions that are managed as part of the overall administration in order to build our capacity. That's the only place we're going to get additional capacity. So I say to provincial officials, you don't have to think very carefully about whether or not you're passionate about education broadly or passionate about colleges in particular. If you're passionate about colleges in particular, the function is going to be located probably in Pretoria, and then you need to think about whether or not you want to follow your post or if you're going to jump to another post. I am quite unequivocal. It's a fragile sector for all of these complex transitions. They are inevitable, they are unavoidable, because it does need to become a national function. But we have limited capacity. The function is still being managed by the provinces, and that's why we are working so very closely to them. So the chief directorate within what was the F branch is moving along, moves across. We're still highly dependent on the education department for information, for interventions, etc. The budget that's there, the 3.2 or so that was before it was increased by the 400 million to become 3.7, comes directly from what was being spent in provinces. And I'm very concerned, I'm putting it on the table, is we're very concerned about whether that baseline was firstly accurate and secondly appropriate. I'm doing a lot of work on this at the moment, and I'll be briefing the chairperson that we are going to be going into intensive process of round tables with stakeholders. I would very much like the committee to be part of that. In terms of the exam function, which is particularly important for the colleges, that's where we have particular capacity difficulties. We're going to have a person who's a director taking responsible for the exams function, and so again, we're trying to bring in additional expertise. The question that you raise about weak administration in the colleges, it's a very uneven picture. There are some colleges in the country that are very weak, and there's some that are very strong. And our intention is to work particularly with stakeholder organizations, the South African Parliament Organization, or as they sometimes refer to themselves, the SACP and the FETPO, to in partnership support them. And the question of placing under administration in a very difficult position, as when colleges are very weak, they still depend on the provincial department. So it's all at the moment, I would say, greater, and it's being built on the basis of very good relationships and trying to sustain very good relationships, which is taking a huge amount of my time at the moment. The question of the meeting with the Minister of Economic Development and Minister of Higher Education and Training, I would like to take a little bit further. I think that this year there's a huge amount on the plate of this committee. I definitely understand that. But Chairperson, I would say that we're coming up for the Human Resource Development SA launch on the 30th of March. And I think it's critical that this committee has an understanding that must carry. Does that mean that I should just stop?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm simply saying, Member Kadebe, I'll talk to you anyway to the House. Thank you very much, DC. Before that, can I give it over to the really Chairperson now?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's thank the person that is in the chair. Also, thanks to the DG and the team. I think these are the bigger issues that you are raising around more money. The critical issue there is, and the assumptions around, you know, the 2 billion, the 10 billion, the et cetera, those type of assumptions. What we also need to interrogate is the affordability, the current expenses around education. And is there a cost driver that in a sense has, you know, as the property market has had a cost driver that has gone quite far, was there cost driver towards education that has blown it up in a very real way over the last couple of years? So there's an interrogation in terms of even that. So I don't want to make assumptions that currently our education in terms of training at universities, but also is a necessary appropriate in terms of the modeling. So that interrogation needs to happen. The second, so yes, it is more money, but it's not necessary then as is. So that's the point that I'm driving. Secondly, I think we must support the department around more money in any case, because the president did indicate that it's the top priority. You can actually go and analyze that, so we need to find a strategy in that. Thirdly, the question around the rollovers. The argument, we are only as strong as we can say we're actually spending your money. Now, remember, it's a new department, so we understand the space that you are in terms of the old and the new. But can I ask them that on Tuesday morning, if the DG can just put program, just give us a one-pager just through the chairperson's office around the actual rollovers that we're expecting and what it is about, the programs actually. So that is the critical view. I just came from a meeting that discussed those issues for all departments, by the way. Members, I think what we will do is to then meet next week, and we also will then, if need be, possibly bring in the department for next week on specifically to deal with if there's any outstanding issues. The DG is right, we need a broader discussion, and we need to partner, but ours are not able to understand all the systemic issues, the problems. We don't want to accept the bureaucratic reason, not the bureaucratic reason as individuals here, but the system. We understand our system and the bureaucracy works, but we also know that the masses of our people have raised real issues, and we need to see how do we bring the balance of the two, and I think that's the spirit of this type of engagement. Thanks, members.